Senate Committee on Revenue and School Finance.
Okay.
Agenda, March 4th, 1981, 1:30 p.m., Hearing Room 137. Work session, Senate Bill 48, Use Fuel Tax Definition.
Trying to think of what.
Senate Bill 65, Clarifies Definition of Federal Income Tax as Applicable to State Personal Income Tax Act. Senate Bill 68, Create Warrant Procedure for Unpaid Timber Taxes.
Do you want to get together a list of examples?
Senate Bill 398, Exempt Farm Tools from Property Tax.
Senator Day is excused, and Senator McFarland is taking care of a bit of business. Be right back. Have on our agenda four bills that we're going to look at in work session. We will have amendments offered to some, and I will allow people who have concerns about both amendments and proposals to speak to them. First, Senate Bill 48. Terry, can you bring us up to date on where we are?
A little recap on last time when we were talking about Senate Bill 48. But you have a revenue impact with a little short description of what the bill's intention is. The original bill was to change the definition of fuel subject to the use fuel tax to include fuel used in any engine rather than just internal combustion engines. The existing statute refers to fuels that are used in internal combustion. And the discussion that came up was specifically with respect to steam vehicles or other types of sort of technologically advanced engines that may not be internal combustion. The second thing was to establish an equivalency between gallon fuel and compressed natural gas or other types of gaseous fuels. A concern at that time was raised with respect to the term compressed natural gas. Now, we have representatives here from the Department of Transportation, who at that time were requested to come back with amendments and have the amendments before you, and I'm sure they would be ready to speak to you on it.
Gentlemen?
Wouldn't there be at least some revenue impact?
Looks like you're fishing for sturgeon. Tight line. I think that's as far as we'll go, and then Senator Kroll probably trip it with his foot here for a moment. We got it. Is your foot? What is that situation?
It splashes right there under his feet.
But I haven't done anything.
Oh, no, you haven't. I was just thinking you'll probably
we just wondered
cross your
why
legs.
You didn't.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lloyd Hinion, manager of Financial Planning and Economic Services, Oregon State Department of Transportation. With me this afternoon to keep me straight is Mr. George Burgess, transportation economist for the department. And as you recall, last time we were searching for a way in this bill to be comprehensive in the event that some interpretations might suggest that there were gases produced other than natural gases. So we do have a suggested change in the bill, an amendment that we believe that will be comprehensive. Senator Day did suggest that we talk to Ron Householder of Department of Environmental Quality. We did that. We also checked in with our own people in the Use Fuel Division, Mr. Conrad, who's here with us today, and other experts in Oregon and California, Mr. Mingo at Oregon State University and others. And I believe we've come up with some language that is comprehensive. Okay, do we want to turn to the bill itself and go to page 2? The language that's in the bill in page 2 is line 1, starting with line 1, following to 1, 2, and 3 is 100 cubic feet of compressed natural gas measured at 14.73 pounds per square inch of pressure at 60 degrees Fahrenheit is taxable at the same rate as a gallon of fuel. Okay, the problem is that it says natural gas. There are manufactured gases, and there are a number of different combinations of manufactured gases. We believe that changing that language to the following, which I believe you have before you, 100 cubic feet of fuel used or sold in a gaseous state measured at 14.73 pounds per square inch of pressure at 60 degrees Fahrenheit is taxable at the same rate as a gallon of liquid fuel. We believe that language is comprehensive, will do the job, will take care of any kind of fuel sold in a gaseous state. And we think it's fair. We think the 100 cubic feet is fair. We checked this out with people in California, and as I say, experts in these conversion formulas, and they agree that this is a...
California's a gaseous state.
Senator McFarland?
Yeah. Where do you end now? 100 cubic feet of fuel used or sold in a gaseous state measured at? Where does it go from there?
That's really measured at 14.73 pounds per square inch.
Okay.
Right.
So you leave out the word natural gas on line two also.
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Hanlon?
Mr. Chairman, in your suggested language on the second page of your suggested amendments here, why do you use both the words used and also the word sold? At what point do you tax this? Time is sold, right?
Mr. Chairman.
Why do you need both words?
Senator Hanlon, it is possible that some people are producing their own fuel and not buying it from anyone else. They're just producing it and using it. So our point is that I think if there's a word that's not needed, it's sold. You know, it's used. You know, the point is really that it's, if it's used on the roads.
Now, at what point would you tax gas used in a truck, for example, natural gas used in a truck? Who would pay the tax? Where do you make the point of contact?
The way the law reads, it is taxed at the retail level if it's sold at the retail level, unless the user has a user sticker that he puts in his windshield, which then exempts him from having to pay the tax at the retail outlet, and he can then pay it himself on a quarterly or an annual basis by reporting directly to the fuel tax division the amount of fuel used and the tax due on it.
So in one case, the tax would be on the basis of sale, in the other case would be on the quarterly return used. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Trope, to come back, I think, to the same thrust of Senator Hanlon's question. Suppose you produced the fuel yourself and used it yourself. You're saying you have to pay a tax on it anyway. Is that the case now?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Crowe, that's correct.
Okay. Use it on the highway.
Yeah. Use it anyplace, right?
No.
Not anyplace. Mr. Chairman, Senator Crowe and Senator McFarland, it would not be taxable if it's used on off the public highways.
Okay.
In your tractor.
In your tractor, for example.
In that light, with this new language, if a off-road vehicle, tractor, or something of that sort, was using gas, would this new language mean that it would have to be taxed at the time of the sale, as opposed to a reporting form that is or sold in a gaseous?
Mr. Chairman. George, do you know the answer to that, or should we call up Ms. Conrad?
No, I think that they would be taxed at the retail level when they bought it, and then be able to apply for a refund, unless they had a user sticker in their windshield. That would give them the option.
What if somebody had it delivered to their farm, for example, and they were not going to use it in a motorized vehicle that would be subject to the tax? The sale takes place when they deliver it.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Conrad of our Use Fuel Division, and make sure that we're telling you the straight story here.
Mr. Chairman, I'm with Sam Conrad, Fuels Tax Branch, Motor Vehicles Division. And the incidence of taxation as far as any special fuel is concerned, which is diesel, butane, propane, et cetera, is placement of the fuel into the fuel tank of a vehicle. Now, this can be done at the service station level. It can be done at a person's home base if he has facilities for storage of fuel. So the incidence of taxation is placement into the fuel tank of the vehicle.
Okay.
Whether that be at a retail outlet or whether that be at the individual's residence or place of business, whatever.
Okay, so the language here, when it says are you telling us that the sale is consummated when it's placed, put into the vehicle?
The sale may not be consummated at that point. The sale may be consummated when it's placed into a storage tank that's owned by a business, that's owned by an individual, a farm. So the use is what determines whether the fuel is going to be taxed or not. And the use would be in a motor vehicle.
The question, I think, my question is, when do they pay the tax? Would they have to pay it at the time it was placed in a bulk tank, for example,
due
to this language?
No, the seller is not required to collect the tax unless he places it into the fuel tank of a vehicle. So if he places it into a bulk tank, the incidence of taxation passes to the person who's ultimately going to put it into the fuel tank of a vehicle.
Okay.
The user himself. And this is defined in the definitions of the law.
I think the last of that sentence says at the same rate as a gallon of fuel means it's going to be handled in the same manner. I think that's the crux of it right there. And if you do have it in your container in your home, then it becomes your responsibility to keep tab of it. And you do have to pay at the end of the year. Am I not right?
Of course.
Senator, I wonder if we're not going to have some problem with the language. If it's possible to use the fuel without paying the tax on it in any situation, and apparently is. If you say fuel used or sold in a gaseous state is taxable, not all of it is taxable. It has to be used on the highway, didn't they say?
That's the same situation we have now. If I own a farm and I have it delivered to my tank on the farm of gasoline, and so this puts this in the same category exactly as how the farmers have to pay their fuel taxes.
You think the language is all right then?
Not exactly.
I think there's a problem with the language.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, can you respond to Senator Trow's inquiry? Are we, are we creating a potential problem in that regard?
Mr. Chairman, would you respond to
this? I don't think we're creating any more of a problem with the gaseous fuel than is existent with other special fuels, because other fuels are handled in exactly the same way. Diesel, propane are all handled in this same manner. If they're placed into a bulk tank, for instance, diesel into a farm tank, it's up to the farmer then to report what gallonage he puts into his truck tank to use on the public highways. So we have the same thing. And the definition of fuel in the use fuel law is combustible materials that are used for the generation of power to propel a motor vehicle on the highway. So in saying that this is fuel under this law, we're saying it's fuel used in that particular aspect.
Okay. Now,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Senator Trow, I do think there's a generalized problem that, that you're putting your finger on. And quite frankly, it's one we've wrestled with for several years, and we're not quite sure how to address. Okay. If an individual buys, for example, diesel fuel and puts it in a bulk tank, it could be for home heating fuel purposes, but it also may be that their car runs fine on it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's a fudge factor.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Senator Crowe, it's a very difficult issue how to resolve that. Now, the one way you could do it is to tax diesel fuel, for example, all diesel fuel, home heating fuel, and then let the folks that don't use it in on the roads get a refund. But that creates, as you can imagine,
well, that's real simple.
other problems.
I think
and
you got that from California.
And I'm not sure that that's the way that Oregon wants to go. Other suggestions have been dyes and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, those problems are apparent in almost in any tax, whether it's income tax or any tax. There are ways of avoiding them that people are openly admitting to these days. At least when you promise to keep the questionnaires confidential. We're not going to handle that issue right here. So now with the bill in its current form, with your amendments, you feel confident that we are getting rid of the internal combustion limitation and that it's basically now would encompass any fuel that propels a motor vehicle on the public highways.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We feel that it would address that issue entirely.
Senator Monroe, did you have a question?
Well, the language appears very clear to me when you look at the meshing of the section 2, which starts on page 1 on line 27, where it says at the end of that, an excise tax hereby is imposed at the rate of 7 cents per gallon on, and here's the key phrase, on the use of fuel in a motor vehicle. Then it goes on to say that 100 cubic feet is equal to 1 gallon. And then if you look at the definition on the other page of use of fuel in a motor vehicle, in line 23, it says use of fuel in a motor vehicle means to receive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, consumed in propelling the motor vehicle on the highways of this state. And it defines what is meant by highways. So I think it's really pretty clear that we're only talking about when this fuel is used to run a vehicle down the highways. I think the language is clear. I probably shouldn't say that because the last time I said that in this committee, I had to carry the bill.
That's a good suggestion.
I'll accept that motion. Is there an objection? It's so ordered. Senator Jernstedt. Okay. Senator Jernstedt moves the amendments dated 3581
control again
for the committee. Is there further discussion of those amendments? Seeing none, is there objection? There's no objection, and a quorum being present, there's so ordered. Okay, anything else in that line?
I think that does, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Thank you, members of the committee, and I also want to thank Senator Day, who's not present here, for...
Maybe he should carry it. That way he'd understand it.
Why do you want
to thank
him?
Is it appropriate that we move the
Pardon?
Bill?
Why do you want to thank him?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Troll, he's the one that suggested that... No, perhaps it was you. Maybe I should be thanking you.
Oh,
thank you,
Senator
Drumstead.
Pretty soon we'll be clear around to Senator McFarland.
I'm the one that defined diesel for you.
I'm just trying to figure out who should carry the bill. Thanks.
Okay. My apologies, Mr. Chairman, to Senator Drumstead.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, is it appropriate to move this bill?
Well, I don't know. Let's see if... Craig, did you people have something? They had testified earlier on the bill and prior to these amendments being formulated.
looks familiar. I think he's in the wrong committee.
Yeah, you only see me in the other committee. Mr. Chairman, I'm Craig Honeyman, Northwest Natural Gas Company. Just a point of information. The company is going to consider asking the legislature to exempt compressed natural gas from the fuel use tax as an alternate fuel similar to alcohol fuel legislation that's being considered. We are not going to use SB 48 as a vehicle to bring that up. There is other legislation which either completely exempts or partially exempts gasohol from the fuel use tax, and we are going to consider asking the legislature to include CNG. But that is a policy issue which will be going to other committees. I think one of the bills, for example, is going to go before the House C&E Committee. It may come to you at some point, and you may have to face the issue. But just as a matter of information, I wanted to let you know that's something we're considering.
Okay. Let me ask you, Senator, why should we exempt it?
Well, we feel that compressed natural gas could be made that it could be considered an alternative fuel, an alternative to oil, that it can be used in certain kinds of uses. For example,
should we exempt every alternative? For heaven's sakes, pretty soon we won't have any taxes at all.
It fix our roads.
That would, I suppose, have to be a value judgment that would have to be made. I think CNG being used now by the phone company here in the Salem area, on an experimental basis as a fleet use, is helping them offset the cost of putting gasoline into their fleet. And it's, if it was the legislature's judgment that this was a desirable way to go, then we would make the argument that a disincentive such as inclusion under the fuel use tax might be something you'd want to do away with, at least temporarily. If CNG, if for some reason the use of compressed natural gas took off and became an extremely widespread use, then certainly you'd want to look at taxing it again, and we would not oppose that.
Just the people who modified their vehicles.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you finished, Senator Trump? Senator Monroe.
Well, one of the proposals that I've seen that I do think, you know, certainly has merit is a proposal that would tax some of these alternative fuels like gasohol and, you know, liquefied natural gas could come under this too on the basis of their BTU output. You know, some people are saying that taxing gasohol or taxing alcohol as a motor fuel at the same rate that you tax diesel in terms of cents per gallon is unfair because the BTU output is far less. And so there is a proposal, or at least I think there is a proposal that would treat the fuel tax on the basis of the energy output of the particular kind of fuel. You know, that's a different question than the one you're talking about. What you're talking about is some kind of what would amount to a credit or a subsidy to use an alternative fuel to get us off petroleum, and that would be a policy decision that might be advisable if it were not for the fact that our highway fund is in bad shape.
I realize that the question of revenues is something will have to be addressed.
And the fact that some of the fleets have converted over is an indication that at least for fleet use may be economically feasible to convert over now without that added incentive of no tax. Something else we'd have to think about. Are we giving people an incentive to do something that they already have an economic incentive to do?
The use of CNG is as I pointed out by the phone company, was initiated a year or so ago, might be a little longer than that, on an experimental basis. They are continuing to use it. I don't know what their long-range plans are. Our company is looking into the possibility of converting some of our fleet, both here in Salem and in Portland. I can only say there hasn't been a widespread push at this point towards the use of CNG or LNG, but it could happen.
Senator Hamlin, did you finish that?
Yeah.
Senator Hamlin.
Do you have any figures on what it costs to convert a vehicle from gasoline to gas?
No, sir, I don't.
What's the incentive now? Is the operating cost per mile cheaper with natural gas than with gasoline?
I'm not an expert on the use of that fuel in an automobile or a truck. I suspect that it is, being a cleaner fuel, cheaper to maintain, operate, and maintain.
My thought, Mr. Chairman,
and certainly cheaper to purchase.
Senator Crowe has a point. If we exempted natural gas, pretty soon we'd have so many vehicles out there using the highways and not paying for them. That wouldn't be defensible. But if we have done already created incentives for people to convert from some of the less readily available fuels to something else, it might not be out of order to consider a limited exemption to encourage people to incur the expense of converting their cars or trucks from petroleum to natural gas. I don't know what the time would be, but I'd certainly like to see the idea considered.
I'll provide you with information as to what it would cost to convert a vehicle.
Thank you.
Senator Gerstead?
It has nothing to do with this bill, though.
No.
Okay, have you seen the amendments?
Yeah, well, I just heard them.
Okay, do you see anything?
No problem.
Okay, thank you very much. Somebody from the department again. What if a person was using biomass pellets to propel an automobile?
Mr. Chairman, there are it's a whole smorgasbord of probabilities in terms of fuels to propel an automobile. Each of them have a particular BTU per equivalency per gallon of gasoline, of liquid gasoline. For example, compressed natural gas has about 106,000 BTUs. Let's see, 106,000, and gasoline has 125,000. Others would have about 50% or 60% of that. Liquid biomass is very low.
Okay, what if it wasn't in liquid form?
Well, same. Gaseous form, Mr. Chairman, gaseous forms, depends whether it's methane or ethane. But
these amendments would not pick up a solid form, would they? A solid form of biomass that was being used?
Mr. Chairman, no, because the amendment is just for gaseous form.
Because I hope to drive a truck within 2 weeks that converts it from a solid into a gaseous state while you're driving and propels the automobile. So
it's at that point it'd be taxed.
You're not selling it. You're
but you're using it.
You're using the highway.
Okay, perhaps.
Yeah, once it makes that transformation from solid to gaseous, it's taxed.
Mr. Chairman.
It's not going to be my vehicle.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps you're talking about a new form of technology that I'm not aware of.
It's as old, at least, as the Second World War, when they used to propel automobiles with some solids, and it's simply a new conversion technology that uses an old, very old technology. Instead of losing about 50% efficiency, you lose about 5%. You have a microcomputer that controls the diesel input and this gaseous fuel as it's ready to be used in this mechanism, and it's a combination, cuts in and out, and the operator doesn't know what's going on. The computer does it.
So, what kind of solid?
I see.
Just biomass, vegetation of any kind can be made into this and then turned into. Probably a line of black smoke for 6 months.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to make one further point, and this is, I'm sure, a boring point to everyone. It's even boring to me to some extent, but the point that we do like to make is that we're concerned about use of the highways. Even if a vehicle ran on water, Mr. Chairman, we would like to see the use of the highways in some sense taxed. And our concern is not so much whether a particular fuel is more or less efficient in a BTU sense. But really, it relates to the cost and use of the highways.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I think the, see any problems?
Move it out.
Sure. No, I think we can go ahead and act on it. Terry, do you have something?
One thing, I suspect on respect to the alternative fuels that they could, they by administrative rule, give them us language. Material of any kind. When they have been taxing the natural gas without this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Trump.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 48 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Okay. Senator Trump moves Senate Bill 48 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Being none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Senator McFarland.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Senator Trump.
Aye.
Senator
Powell. Aye. Motion's adopted.
Did I cast a good vote?
I think.
All right.
No, you just earned the right to carry the bill.
I'll pay attention, teacher.
Is there someone who would like to carry it?
Senator Monroe knows the bill so well. He knows
well,
the
I wouldn't mind carrying. Senator Trump, do you ever, when you have a delinquent account, ask the person for permission?
To garnish?
The bank, yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
No, sir, we don't. We, garnishment action, Senator Trump, is a last resort action. We contact the taxpayer in every case if we can and make both a written and a verbal request that they pay it. And if they don't pay it, then we start looking for assets that we can levy on, and a bank account obviously is one of them.
How often do you have to do this?
Quite often, Senator Trump. We do it many times daily.
Do you?
Yes, sir.
Hundreds during the year, then, probably?
Yes, sir. Hundreds during the year.
Not really. Okay.
Senator Trump. How do you do it now if you don't have permission to do it?
Well, it is moving, it is long.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trump, we try to obtain the information from the bank and then from our own records, and if we're not able to locate the bank account by making requests for, you know, for the information, then we make a judgment decision as to where we think the taxpayer's bank account might be located, and we issue garnishments, and the banks then respond to the garnishments. They have 5 days to respond to our garnishments.
There is a modus operandi now. It would just be better if you had this.
It would be better and less costly if we had this, and faster. Yes, sir.
Well, and I understand where you come from. I'm just persuaded at this point that the good is somewhat outweighed by the evidence of and the good of confidentiality in this case. Unless I can be persuaded that it would in fact undo a knot that's so tight that you can't get through it any other way. I can't feel convinced that it's necessary for us to open it up to that degree. Because I'll tell you, on one of these documentary-type shows, like 60 Minutes or 2020, a few months ago, they had a show about a private detective who made 2 or 3 phone calls from New York City about the reporter doing the story on it. He told him from those phone calls where he banked, where he bought his clothes, the restaurants he dined in Paris when he was a correspondent there, and on and on and on. And I think one of them was a credit bureau type outfit that he got a hold of, which had access to this person's behavior. And I think that there is need for some fairly strict confidentiality, and that's no slam at the department, because I know you operate under very strict rules in that regard. But at the same time, I also know that abuses can take place at different times. Any other questions of these gentlemen? Thank you, and Mr. Sherman, thank you for coming. Ira, we need you to stay here, and probably maybe Homer, if you have interest in other sections of the bill.
Couple.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Sherman. It was excellent testimony. Okay, looking at. Mr. Russell from the Employment Division is also here on the other point. Mr. Russell, why don't we take your point now, and perhaps you could do something else if you wanted to after you told us about that portion of the bill.
Lee Russell, manager of the Unemployment Insurance Tax Section of the Employment Division. The point that we're interested in, of course, is the amendment that would provide permission for the Employment Division to give certain information from our records to the Department of Revenue. We have requested comments from the Solicitor's Office of the U.S. Department of Labor to see if they would have any problem with such a provision. And I'm not sure when we'll get that response back. They're swamped with requests. About 50 state legislators are meeting, and they're getting all kinds of requests. Verbally, I have received some information that would indicate that probably, as long as the information going to another state agency, there would probably not be a problem, but that's an unofficial statement. One of the concerns that we have is that, and the Department of Labor has indicated this, if there's any cost of providing that information that's not the normal cost of the Employment Security activity, then we would not get funded from the federal funding source for that. We would have to absorb it out of pocket and cut down the service somewhere along the line. Another concern, I was here not the last time you talked about this, was the Department of Labor made a request to possibly contract with private employment agencies and primarily in other states. And not that I think this might happen, but we would be concerned about the department giving any information they'd gotten from our records to a private collection agency. For instance, I think that might be a problem that the national office might address.
Now, Lee, is this the same section of the bill that we were just discussing that impacts you?
I'm not sure. I never...
Ira, which section is it?
The section that would impact them was the one that you took out of the amendments the time before. You're going to hold something...
As a separate...
Back. It's a separate section.
But, separate and that's region. Not in this mock-up?
That's not in this
okay. Okay. So we will handle that as a separate issue, because as we projected, it would be some time before you'd receive an official reply. You think that would be within a month?
I would hope. We sent the official request in a little better than a week ago, and okay. Under normal conditions, we asked them to expedite it so that it wouldn't hold up the deliberations of the committee. And if we don't hear from them sometime by the end of next week, I will make a contact and see if I can't speed up the process a little bit.
Good.
And one thing I might mention, I don't know whether there's any information from the Department of Revenue records that the Employment Division could have some use, but possibly thought might be if we provide them some information, that there might be some information that would be helpful to us in the administration of the unemployment insurance tax program, that, you know, a reciprocal type arrangement.
We can't hear you.
Oh.
Before you start using liquefied natural gas, that thing, I could hear him, but now I'm not.
That's,
Well, we're, don't bother the guy. It's, we're only going to be here 15 more minutes. Maybe you can get it worked out. You'll have to, please speak up and hear each other.
While we're considering this, if this does meet the, no problem with the Department of Labor, and as I say, I don't know whether there's any information from the withholding records and so forth that the Department of Revenue has that would be helpful to us in our unemployment insurance tax administration, but there would think there might be some reciprocal arrangement where we could get some information from them if it was felt it would be helpful. One thing that the amendment seemed to indicate that we could provide information on names and addresses of employers and employees. We would only have the address from employees in the case of a claimant. And we have to provide certain indications to claimants to what we're going to use that various information for, and that may be a problem of providing information on the address of employees. Certainly, if we have information from an employer and the detail of the employees working for that employer during a particular quarter, and the Department of Labor doesn't have any problem with that, we wouldn't have any problem either providing that information. Those are my comments that I have at this time.
Well, we'll wait to hear from you then. Let our staff know as soon as you hear from them, and we'll just treat that as a separate vehicle, I think.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Ira Homer, do you want to...
Mr. Chairman, the only other part of the amendments that has been changed since the time you last saw them, except that I've put together a couple of sets, is that in the new Section 6 that is being created on the first page of the amendments.
Page 4.
No, on page, the first page of the amendment.
Okay.
Yes, 2581.
We have this hand engrossed bill. Do you have a copy of that?
No, I don't have a copy of that, but it would be Section 6 on page 4 then.
Yeah.
You wanted to make sure that if the department were to engage in the services of a collection agency, that it had to be for a collection outside of the state. So you'll notice that down in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th line on those typed amendments, we have, third line. It says the director may engage the services of a collection agency to collect outside the borders of the state of Oregon any taxes, interest, and so on in that section, subsection. Then down in subsection 2, to make doubly sure that we didn't... somebody misread the thing. It says the director may assign to the collection agency for out-of-state collection purposes only any of the taxes, penalties, interests, and monies and so on due the state. So we're making it very clear that this is for collection outside of the state of Oregon. And that's really what we wanted.
Yeah.
We didn't want to necessarily engage collection agencies for in-state collection.
Okay.
Otherwise, they're just the same as you went over before.
And they're from, I think, I believe Senator Day also asked to check the references. Was this the bill? Because there were so many references to different statutes that they be checked to make sure there were no problems with?
Not, I don't recall.
Senate Bill 68.
That's
okay.
Another bill. That's not this one.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
So you see no other technical problems with the bill? Were there any other issues besides the confidentiality and the employment issue, which is not now the employment issue we've taken out? We've adopted the other amendments. Did we adopt the amendments, Section 7?
I don't recall whether you did or not.
I don't think we did.
You adopted the first ones that are on, that have to do with changes of some small language.
Yeah, we took out individual and things like that. We've adopted those.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you did adopt the section 7.
Yeah, I think we did. Okay. Okay. So we have a Hand and Gross bill that's photocopied, 65. And it has, we've been over those changes and recalling that that language on the front page is extremely important. It carries about a $50 million impact. And we went over the other, many of them very tech, just minor housekeeping in nature. Section 6, as Ira just discussed, allows them to contract with collection agencies when collecting outside the state. And Section 7 is the confidentiality amendment that we had testimony on from the banks. And then we had the amendments in Section 9, to make sure we're picking up everybody from now on as well.
Mr. Chairman, you'll need an amendment to change Section 7.
If the committee chooses to delete or to reject that language that would allow the department that access, then we would need to delete Section 7.
That's the whole substance of the proposed amendment to Section 7?
Yes.
I understood that it was.
It's the only change.
Yes.
Okay. I would so move if Senator Crowe has not already done so.
Senator Hanna moves that the committee delete Section 7 of the Hand and Gross bill and have the sections renumbered appropriately. Is there further discussion on that motion, Senator Trump?
Could I ask your witnesses again one more time? How much effect is this going to have on your operation? How badly do you need this to do this?
Section 7?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trump, this will have an effect on our collection program, but it will not
you already
prohibit
have
us. We have the capability of doing what we're asking to do here.
Okay.
I don't want to mislead you. We do have the capability of getting this information under the existing.
This would make it easier.
This would make it easier.
Yes, you don't really need it.
No, sir. This would give us the capability of doing being more productive in our telephone collection work at the central office. That's really the big benefit.
It's an administrative advantage, but
yes, sir.
It has some other problems.
Senator, you can get the job done. Excuse me, sir.
Senator Drinstead.
Well, I want to make sure that I know what I'm doing. Shouldn't that motion be made that we delete the amendments to Section 7, not delete the whole section?
No, I don't think so. I doubt
the bill. You want to delete the whole section, because that's the only thing that Section 7 does is to change it.
We don't need it in the bill. Is there further discussion on the motion? The clerk will call the roll.
Aye. Senator Jernstein.
Aye.
Senator McFarland.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Senator Trou.
Aye.
Senator Powell.
Aye. Motion's adopted and Section 7 is deleted. Okay, we had one other, the other provision dealt with the sheriff. Remember that provision? We tried to get them in to testify on two occasions unsuccessfully. I just received a phone message from the sheriff, who is not in today, in Linn County, saying that they're opposed to it. I've tried to get in touch with other people who in their department to find out why, and again, they were out to lunch.
What are they opposed to?
Well, what section is it, Ira, where we're...
The deletion of 30, or the repealing of... let me get 305.210, which is in, it'd be now new Section 7, and it's where it says there on page 3 of the last page of the bill, ORS 118490, 119025, 119510, and 305.210 are repealed. And 305.210 is the one that required that the...
That the sheriff deliver the subpoena.
Subpoenas.
Yeah.
That was the requirement, it could be the sheriff and the sheriff only.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
And this was the only section in the code or the tax laws now that require the sheriff to be the...
We're the only agency in the state that has to have the sheriff serve.
Okay, is that throughout the agency or didn't it involve a limited, didn't you have some access currently to delivering it on your own?
Mr. Chairman, I think as far as serving subpoenas is concerned, that's throughout the agency. Now, we do, our revenue agents do have authority in the existing law to serve garnishments and warrants and to collect taxes and levy on property and so forth. And this is just, this just has to do with serving subpoenas.
Okay. The reason that we brought that issue up was that in some previous sessions, it seemed to me that we went over the limitation that a sheriff's agency is limited to the amount they can charge for delivering. And that's why I did want to talk to these people, and that I would imagine that their argument is that you will take the easy ones, the ones that they could serve for a cost of $7, and you will ask them to deliver for you the ones that will cost $30, and the maximum fee they can charge you is $11. I would imagine that's their argument. I didn't get a chance to talk to them. Do you foresee that being a problem?
Mr. Chairman, I don't. As a matter of fact, I think the department's intent is to serve all of our subpoenas, have our own agents serve all of our subpoenas wherever possible. There might be some isolated situations where we would need to have a law enforcement officer either for protection or some other purpose, you know, do the serving.
Yes.
And so I wouldn't say that we wouldn't do that, but essentially the department would serve all its own subpoenas. That's our objective.
Well, I have, again, we did try with some length to get them here to testify, so I don't know what their arguments are.
They could take it up on the house.
Yeah. The committee can choose as to whether or not you'd like to wait and know more about that argument now, or they could take it up on the house side if they...
Otherwise, would it be appropriate to move it?
Yeah, Ira, the bill from your vantage point is in good shape?
Yes.
I so moved.
Have we moved the amendments yet?
Yeah, we've moved the amendments and taken one back.
We took
but we put six in as written?
Yes.
Okay.
It was already in.
We adopted all of the amendments they had offered. Now, wait a minute.
You didn't adopt the one on the...
That's right, because you changed that. Okay.
So six is a new one then.
Better adopt that.
Yes.
Six is a new one.
Yeah, okay.
Well, the language is new in section six in this mocked-up bill.
Right.
Okay.
We held off on six before because I had that objection to the language.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So Senator Monroe moves that the committee adopt the amended section six on page four of the mocked-up bill before the committee. Is there discussion? Is there objection to that amendment? Being none and a quorum being present, so adopted. Okay. And as we're making these amendments, we will be operating on the assumption that they will have to be renumbered due to the deletion of a section. That some of them, that one will not, but the later ones will.
That was in the motion to delete section 7, I believe.
Right.
It was a motion to delete and renumber.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else that needs to be done on the bill? All right. Senator McFarland would move then that we send amended Senate Bill 65 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hanlon.
Aye.
Senator Dunstan.
Aye.
Senator McFarland.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Senator
Truro. Aye.
Senator Powell.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Thank you very much. We want it engrossed, yes. So that
it's Ira's now. Do we have another set of amendments or anything?
No, I think that's all.
Okay, we will not have time to take up provisions of Senate Bill 68 and 398 today. And we will try to get those next week, although our committee time is being hit hard by floor sessions at 2 p.m. on 2 days next week. So we're going to be hurting as far as committee of time on Senate Bill 398. We may create a subcommittee to look at the problems of trying to come up with a definition there that's suitable. So we will be adjourned until Monday at 1:30.